Prodigal by Gord Seller. Narrated by Michael Braun.
He doesn't look any different,
Jennifer commented when we got home from the research facility after Benji's final sentientization treatment.
He's not supposed to yet, are you, boy?
I said, ruffling the hair on his head. He looked up at us from the tatty carpet with his big, curious terrier eyes, and I'd swear he smiled a little. Technically, she was right. He didn't really act very differently, not in any tangible way. Having recuperated from his various surgeries and treatments, he still liked the same things. Fetch the ball, chasing me around the backyard, going for a run. Familiar pleasures. He'd still come and sit beside me as I watched TV in the evenings, content with a pat on the head or a scratch behind the ear when he caught me working. He was our good-natured consolation prize. Our gentle, not quite a child. A terrier puppy whose brain was developing massive neural connectivity day by day. The sparse woodland of his mind turning into a dense jungle. And whose mouth and throat had been cleverly sculpted into a system capable of expressing in speech those thoughts he'd already started having. I thought of it as this incredible gift at the time. Albeit a gift he hadn't quite received yet. A miracle. He'd be a wonder dog. That was why we'd called him Benji, after all. But I'd be lying if I said I didn't see a change in him right from day one. It was something about his eyes. Something, well, just more than before. To me, it was unmistakable. A few months later, we had some people over. It was the first party we'd had in half a year. Mostly neighbors and co-workers, people like that. Some had heard about Ben. That he'd begun to talk, finally. They expected some kind of demonstration. I'd warned him, hoping it would make him less nervous, but it had the opposite effect. He began to tap his front paws on the carpet, to shake his head a little like a wet puppy, his tail half-wagging nervously. The first few people were folks who'd never come to a party at our place before, and Ben nervously avoided them. Then Lorna arrived. A wannabe painter friend of Jennifer's, Lorna was familiar with Ben. She had played with him before the treatment, so he remembered her a little. As soon as her bulky shoulders passed through the doorframe, Benji barked excitedly. It had become a strange sound, no longer his own, no longer quite dog-like. But he didn't seem to notice or care. He ran up to her and began sniffing at her feet. Ears perking up in recognition, he mumbled a distracted, "Hello," before sticking his nose into her crotch for a sniff. Then he simply proclaimed, "Nice!" "Oh my," Lorna said, reaching down at him. "Now, Ben, you really mustn't do that." She forced his head down, pushing his face away from her, and said to me, "I thought they were supposed to be intelligent post-op." "I'm so sorry," Jennifer said. "Tim, maybe you should take him upstairs." I nodded. "Come on, Bench," I said, and tucked my hand under his collar. I led him to the bottom of the stairs, and he went up them obligingly. I followed him up and then said, "Left, Benji, left." He followed the direction and walked into our bedroom. "Good boy," I said when we were both in, scratching behind his ear. "Why?" he asked me, looking up curiously. "Well, you're not supposed to sniff people like that."
"Sniff?"
"You know," I said and did my best impression of a dog sniffing.
"Oh, nice sniff. Hello, friend."
No, for dogs, it's a nice hello. For people, it's rude, I explained while fishing a hide dog bone out of my sock drawer. I tossed it to him, and he caught it out of the air, but he didn't chew it right away. Instead, he just set it down and stared at me, as if he had some question he didn't know how to phrase. After a while, he seemed to abandon the attempt, and as he chomped down on the bone, I quickly left the room, closing the door behind me. Before I went down to the party, I heard him pad toward the door, sigh loudly, and settle down onto the floor beside the door. But that was what I'd always done with him at parties. It was nothing new, except it felt different now, doing that to him. Watching Benji learn to speak was sometimes downright eerie. It all happened so fast. From a wordless beast, he'd turned into a chatterbox in the space of a few months. They had implanted a neurochemical dispenser inside his skull, something that seeped the chemicals straight into his brain, wiring up a crazy new secondary network that not only made him smarter by the day, but also made him pick up language much faster than any human child. Not that he spoke well. Even with his resculpted upper palate, some words were hard to pronounce, which made him hard to understand, and with no human body language to compensate for it. He was usually wide-eyed, his expression as inscrutable as any canine's. If you've ever known a sentient dog, it might sound crazy, but I swear Benji really did have expressions, though it took me years to learn to read them. "What's Perber?" he asked me one day, just when I got home from work. He was still stuck at excitedly muttering two-word sentences. I squatted down close to the plastic doormat, scratched him behind the ear. "What's that?" "What's pregmand?" he asked quietly, conspiratorially.
"Pregmand? You mean pregnant?"
"It means, that someone has a baby inside," I said. "Like a mama dog, before the baby dog is born. She's pregnant."
"Oh,"
Benji said, and began panting excitedly.
"Really?"
He blinked at me oddly and padded off toward the creaky basement stairs, his tail wagging behind them. I suddenly started wondering whether Benji had gotten out and gotten a sentientized neighbor dog pregnant. We hadn't gotten him neutered, I remembered with a groan. That was not going to be a fun conversation. Of course, that wasn't it at all. Benji just had incredible ears. He could hear phone conversations behind closed doors, arguments two houses away. No secret was safe with Benji around. But the penny only dropped a week later, when Jennifer called me during one of my rare days down at the lab. It was just like her to pick that day to tell me.
"Tim?"
"Yes, honey," I said into my cell phone. "Just a minute." Glancing one last time at the ongoing statistical analysis for artificially accelerated lateral gene transfer, I flicked my monitor sourcing to the phone's feed, and then full-screened the video stream. She was sitting on the couch, wearing a pink t-shirt and dark blue sweatpants. "What's up, sweetie?"
"I have some news," she said, looking slightly green around the gills, but smiling.
I waited for her to go on, but she didn't, until I asked, "What is it?"
Well, honey, remember how Dr. Flynn told us we'd never be able to have a baby?"
"Yeah," I said, eyes widening.
"Turns out she was wrong."
"You're pregnant?" I had to make sure. She nodded at me, a brilliant smile widening on her face. Benji padded into view beside her and looked at her carefully.
"Pregnant, make baby?"
"Yes, Benji. Mommy's making a baby. You know what that means, right, Benji?"
she asked him. He stared at her silently, not answering. He hadn't yet figured out how to answer tag questions like that.
"You're going to have a little brother or sister."
She turned and winked at me and said, "What do you think of that, Big Daddy?"
"Woo!"
I yelled, and then I said, "I love you." And she smiled at me.
"Baby!" Ben shouted,
and his tail wagged, thump, 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 against the couch so hard it made Jen laugh aloud. Over the months that followed, Benji got more and more excited, just like us. One evening after Jennifer had begun to show a little, he started in with questions during dinner. He pulled his head out of his dog dish and turned to Jen.
"Baby dish? Have dish?"
Jen smiled and shook her head.
Baby dish share, he said, and wagged his tail.
Jennifer giggled and said,
how cute.
And I laughed, and I patted him on the flank of his hind leg as he turned back to the dish and devoured his dinner excitedly. The night we brought Martin home, Benji met us at the door.
Hi, Benji,
Jennifer said.
Hi, Mama, he said back. Hi, Daddy.
He looked at Martin, bundled in Jen's arms.
Hi, baby.
The baby's name is Martin, I said, and then added, you can call him Marty, if you like. Benji had problems with pronouncing in. It tended to sound like im. It was some kind of tongue control thing. Something that they hadn't quite gotten right in his treatment.
Marty, baby,
Benji said softly, reverently.
Hi, Marty, baby, he said, and then, come on, baby, baby bed.
What?
Jen asked, head tilted to one side, but Benji had already started off down the stairs into the cool basement.
Honey, I'm going to put Marty to bed. Can you,
Yeah, sure, I said, and waited for her to start up the stairs before I followed Benji down the creaking stairs to the basement. I found him wagging his tail, his nose nudging a spare plastic pad across the bare concrete floor, until it was next to his own. He liked to sleep down there because it was cool and quiet. The one he'd nudged into place was his old doggy bed. The one I should have thrown out months before when I bought his new one.
Me bed,
he said, and touched the old tattered pad with one paw. Then he touched the nice new one and said,
baby bed. Marty baby bed.
I was a little stunned. Benji was sharing. I never expected that from a dog, and it made me smile.
Oh, that's really sweet, Benji.
But, Marty's not a dog. Baby boys don't sleep in the basement. It's too cold and dirty. But it's so nice of you.
You think of him as a brother, huh?
Oh, good boy, I said, patting him on the head.
Such a good boy.
He sat beside the two pads, looked down at them, then up at me.
Baby bed no?
Right, Benji. Baby bed no. He drooped, tail slumped, and sunk to the concrete floor. Later, on hot summer nights when I found him sleeping beside Marty's crib, I remembered him nosing the spare pad into place, and some weird, guilty feeling would well up so fast I could barely drive it back down before having to examine it. They played together so well, Benji and Marty. Both of them scooting around the house on all fours. For a while, they really were like any two brothers. Benji would sniff Marty's bottom occasionally and call Jen or me over.
Baby Marty, make poo!
Marty would push the buttons on a toy piano, and random songs would play. Benji would squeeze Tinky and Jiggy dolls between his teeth, and they'd shout out greetings to Marty, provoking giggles and applause from that bright little blonde toddler of ours. He always wanted to share his dinner with Marty, and his doggy biscuits, no matter how many times we explained that dog food and people food are different. Benji really loved Marty. Loved him as much as any brother would have. Somehow that made me forget all those awkward moments. The questions like, why Marty baby no tail? And Benji no birthday party? And Marty baby poo inside? The time Benji tried to eat off the kitchen table and sent our dinner crashing down by accident. Jen used to breastfeed Martin at the table while she ate her own dinner sometimes, and Benji was perplexed by this, sometimes more than once a week.
Marty baby eats what?
Benji too? Benji eat what too?
No, Benji, Jennifer said. You're a dog, he's a baby. Babies have milk, but dogs have dog food. This milk is not for you. It's only for Marty, see?
No, Benji, he repeated ruefully,
He'd started repeating that phrase every time someone said it, even gently. It's just the way everyone talks to dogs, isn't it? When they jump up onto guests or try to hump your leg? That's right. Benji, no. Good boy, I said. He lay down on the cool tile floor beside his bowl and thumped his tail once. Just once. With a kid, the years pass so quickly you lose track. One day you're burping a baby. The next you have a little boy sitting beside you with a book in his lap reading. And then the boy and his dog went home, Martin mumbled. I smiled. I'd mouthed the words along with him, but he'd done it all by himself. Good job! I patted him softly on the back. You got every word. Did you like the story? Yep, he said. I want to read it again, he said. Okay, let's... No, Marty insisted, shaking his head. I want to read it with Benji. He hopped down off the couch, onto the carpet, and toward the dog. Benji turned his head and said, You? Read with me? Sure, Benj, he replied. Okay, Benji said, and he sat up. You read, I listen. Read slow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Page one, Marty said carefully. The story of Timmy and Spot, he said from memory. He knew the first few pages of the picture book by heart. There was a boy. His name was Timmy. There was a dog. Its name was Spot. Now you read. Benji said, I can't read, but I remember. There was boy. His name Timmy. There was dog. His name Spot. Marty said, No, Benji. There was a dog. Its name was Spot. Benji blinked, stared at the page, at the picture, I suppose, since he wasn't supposed to be able to read. Not ever. There was dog. Its name Spot. Good, Marty said. Now you're getting it. Things started to go wrong around that time. The day that sticks out in my memory was this afternoon when I had some buddies over to watch the game on our new net TV, while Jen and Marty were out someplace. Charlie, Deke, DeMarco, and Peter were there, and we were all hollering at the screen. I don't know when Benji came into the room, but when the ads came up, and Charlie and Deke hurried to the kitchen to get us all some cold beers, Ben tapped Peter on the leg with one paw. Oh, hey, Benji. How are you, boy? Peter asked absently, the way anyone asks any dog, sentient or not. He patted Ben on the head for a few seconds. Okay. Question, okay? Ask you? Sure, Benji, he grinned. He'd probably never met a dog as inquisitive as Benji. I never have. What is it? You Korean? Well, I'm Korean-American, yeah. I wondered how Benji had known that. Was it just a guess? Why Korean eat dog? DeMarco and I both turned and looked at Peter, who sat there with one eyebrow raised. DeMarco started to chuckle as Peter glanced at each of us before turning back to Benji. Say what? Benji asked the question again. Why Korean eat dog? Peter looked up at me, puzzled. I shrugged and gave him a baffled look. DeMarco was doubled over now, laughing hysterically. Racist dog, he said, before bursting into laughter again. That's funny, man. They should put you on TV, Benji. The Racist Talking Dog Show. Peter started laughing along. Huh, I'd watch that show, he said. Then he said, Look, Benj, the last time I visited Korea, I didn't see any dog restaurants. All my relatives think eating dog is terrible. They say it's mostly old guys who do it, and I never asked them why. So, I don't know why anyone would eat dog. I guess they think it tastes good or something. But hey,
Nobody's gonna eat you, okay?
Benji blinked, processing this. Dogs think people taste good, too.
Which, none of us knew what to say.
We all sat there in silence until DeMarco sniffed and said, "Yeah, man, well, dogs think their own crap tastes good, right?"
"Sure,"
Benji said. And we all burst out laughing as Deke and Charlie walked back into the room with the beers. But Benji just looked from one of us to the next, his eyes quite serious. Then the ads were done, and the announcer was talking about why Nick Lingenfelder wasn't in the game this week, and whatever it was Benji wanted to say, he kept it to himself, and just went back to the door, muttering, "Can I go out?" as he passed me.
Sure, Benj, I said, and went to open the back door.
He went out without so much as a glance toward me. I remember thinking that wasn't like him. When I went back into the living room, DeMarco was telling Charlie and Deke about his idea for the TV show about Benji the racist dog. I shrugged. "Yeah, guys, I have no idea where he picked that up. But, you know, he's young. You know how kids can be."
"Kids?" Charlie mumbled, flopping onto the couch. "He's a dog, Tim."
He handed me a beer. I nodded.
He's a souped-up dog, though.
Souped-up dog. Tasty," Deke said, and DeMarco burst out laughing again. Peter chucked a sofa cushion at him, grinning. "You better talk to him, though," he said. "Some people I know would take that shit the wrong way." That evening, I found Jen and Benji in the kitchen, talking. Benji's head was lowered, the way he did when we caught him breaking the house rules.
"No, Benji, it's okay," Jen said, patting him on the head. "It's an understandable question, but... well, you know how some dogs bite people? But not all dogs, right? Not all dogs are the same, right? It's the same with people. Not all people of the same kind are the same."
"Oh," Benji said, and then he wagged his tail once, which was his way of nodding. "Not all dogs same." He'd learned that lesson trying to chat with the neighborhood dogs, none of whom were sentientized. "Lots of dogs can't watch TV like you do," Jen said, absentmindedly fiddling with one of Marty's cartoon DVD cases on the kitchen table.
"Right," he said, and he asked, "But why not?"
Before she could answer him, I stepped into the room and said, "Is Benji watching TV?" Jen looked up. She looked tired.
"Yeah. I leave the dog channel on when I'm out. It's supposed to help his English."
"I talk good soon," Benji said.
And like that, it clicked in my head. The shift to 4- and 5-word sentences I'd observed, the slightly improved syntax. Dogs with the treatment he'd gotten weren't supposed to advance that far, let alone become fluent, but at the rate he was going, he'd be speaking like Marty within the year.
"Yes, Benji, you're really improving. Now, your daddy and I need to talk about something private, Benji. Could you excuse us?"
"Okay," Benji said. "Night," he told each of us one by one, and then he padded off into the basement.
When the creaking on the stairs ended, Jen and I both exhaled. We hadn't even realized we'd been holding our breath.
"It's like,"
she started, but then she hesitated, though I knew what she was going to say.
"Like having two kids," I suggested.
She nodded.
"Exactly."
"Well, that was why we had him done, you know." She nodded, and it hit me how much older she looked now than when we'd decided against adoption and when she'd finally agreed to the dog treatment. If we'd known. Well, there was no point in thinking about that, was there? "So the whole Koreans eating dogs thing, you think he picked that up on TV, maybe?" Jen tapped the kitchen table.
"Maybe. I've never watched any myself."
I looked at the DVD case sitting on the table in front of her, and it hit me. With Marty, we checked everything out first. If he asked for a movie, we checked the parental warnings. There was a nanny lock on the TV, too, a smart lock set to block anything PG-13 or higher when he was alone in the room. But we hadn't set a lock for when it was just Benji alone. Well, maybe we should. The next morning, I found Benji on the couch in front of the TV. A commercial was on. I'd never seen an ad made especially for dogs. Before that day, I'd only ever glimpsed these weird canine athletics shows Benj loved. That always sent Benji straight to me, insistently repeating, "Let's play fetch. Let's play fetch. Wanna play fetch?" In this ad, a pair of dogs was trotting alongside one another, as soft, romantic music played in the background. There was also this soft panting sound, and a kind of rhythmic thumping that didn't fit the music. Lonely? Humping legs not good enough for you? Are you the only talking dog in your neighborhood? Most sentientized canines have trouble finding suitable mates, but we can help you. Call Petmate today. An online contact code flashed across the bottom of the screen, as the screen cut smoothly, if briefly, to one dog mounting another. As the video quickly faded to black, a faint, slightly offensive aroma filled the room, and then quickly dissipated. Beside me, Benji was suddenly panting. Great, I thought. Next he'll be asking me for pocket money, so we can go out and... But the screen shifted abruptly to a stage set with wide, soft-looking red couches. On one sat a beautiful gray-furred German shepherd, a big chewbone under her front paws, cans and packets of some new brand of dog food, brainy dog chow, visible in various places around her. "Good morning," started the voiceover, "and welcome back to Sparky's couch." The camera zoomed in on Sparky's face as her voice was somehow feminine, sniffed at the camera, and the TV's odifers emitting what I swear was the faint aroma of dog butt. Suddenly, that weird smell I'd noticed sometimes in the living room made sense. I'd thought it was just Benji. "I'm your host, Sparky Smith," the German shepherd said in astonishingly perfect English. She must have had the top-of-the-line treatment. "I hope you're comfortably seated on your family's couches, too. Well, yesterday you heard about the plight of Korean dogs from the first Korean sentientized dog, Somi. But it wouldn't be fair to talk about Korea and ignore problems closer to home." My jaw dropped. She sounded like a human TV announcer. The cost of her treatment must have been exorbitant. Or had she been gotten one of those pricey in vitro mods? Looking at Benji, I felt like... was it wrong of us to get him the cheaper treatment? Did he realize he'd never be able to talk like Sparky? Well, according to today's expert, America has a serious dog mistreatment problem as well. Even here, dogs suffer every day. "Everyone, please welcome Duncan Mallory from Iowa," Sparky declared. The camera cut to an audience full of dogs lounging on the terraced studio audience floor area. They were all barking rhythmically, oof, 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 like it was applause, and Benji was barking along with them. A squat brown pug waddled on stage and then hopped onto the couch beside Sparky. As they sniffed one another in greeting, a new dog butt aroma wafted from the TV odifers. Well, I guess it was new. It smelled the same as the last one to me. "Welcome, Duncan. It's nice to have you here," Sparky said. "Thanks, Sparky. I'm happy to be here." The pug's voice was even clearer than Sparky's, with very little accent. It was weird. "Please tell us how you discovered about the suffering of American dogs, Duncan." Melodramatically sad piano music began to play as the dog spoke. "Well, I was surfing the internet and thought that I'd look up the ASPCA. You know, the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals." "Right," Sparky replied. The acronym appeared at the bottom of the screen and stayed in place what seemed like a long time. Maybe it was to let even the least enhanced dogs, dogs like Benji, to memorize the shapes of the letters. After searching around their webpage, I discovered something incredible, he said. The audience and Sparky and Benji panted expectantly. Millions of dogs are killed with poison injections every year, right here in America. It's been going on for decades, too. All of the dogs in the audience yelped in horror. Sparky covered her nose with a paw and made a whining sound. Then she asked, "Why?" "Because they're homeless. Nobody owns them, and nobody wants them, so they're killed," the pug explained, his voice turning a little angry. "In some states, they can still do that even to sentientized dogs. But everywhere in America, non-sentientized dogs die this way every day." The audience began whining, and Benji joined them. The sad music continued as a video montage filled the screen. At first, it was just ankles and knees, which confused me until I realized it was a dog's eye view. The room was filled with a vaguely metallic smell, mixed with the bite of chemical cleaning solution and, faintly, some other offensive aroma, like old piss and sickened animal turds. On screen flashed the faces of miserable dogs framed by the bars of cages, one after another, in an interminable sequence. The camera entered another room, where a dog lay on its side on a table, its legs visible hanging over the edge from above. Benji whined softly, I think unaware that he was doing it. "This is where they inject the dogs," Duncan explained. This was too much, I decided, and I reached for the net TV remote next to Benji's paw. Benji stopped whining along with the audience and looked at me in surprise. "Why? Why what? Why?" He paused, as if trying to figure out what he was asking about. "Why turn the TV off? Why do they kill dogs that way? Why is the world so unfair?" He whined again, this time less unselfconscious. His head hung down, his eyes wide and sorrowful. "Benji, I don't know what to tell you. We try to treat you well, but not everyone in the world is like us." Benji didn't say anything, but he stared at me with this piercing look, as if my explanation wasn't good enough. "Look, those dogs would go hungry. They would be homeless and starve," I said. Benji sat there, looking at me. He knew the word homeless. Whenever we went to the vets downtown, we always passed a couple of homeless people. He had talked to one of them, some old war vet who'd had PTSD and couldn't stand to live indoors anymore. "You don't kill homeless people," Benji said softly. "No, Benj, we don't. Some people probably wish we did, but we don't. Because they're people." Benji whimpered at me and snuffed a little, then looked up at me and said, "Am I a people?" "Of course you are, Benji," I said, without even pausing to think. I didn't add the rest of what I was thinking. "You can talk. You can think." He turned and looked at me, his eyes like those of a dog wall-eyed from sneaking a half box of forbidden dog-toxic chocolate. "This wouldn't do. It was Saturday, sunny and bright outside. Say, Benji, what do you think about going to the park?" He wagged his tail a little weakly. "Come on, boy, let's go ask Jen then," I said, and we got up and walked to the top of the stairs. "Jen! Want to go for a picnic?" I shouted down the stairs, and she called up to me that she thought it was a great idea and only needed a few minutes to finish up her work. I went to get Marty ready. Half an hour later, we had a simple lunch packed and we were on our way. Marty and Benji in the back seat of the microvan, and Jen and I in the front, driving across town to Volunteer Park. We played kids' music all the way, songs about bananas and monkeys and chickens dancing and some guy named Pickles O'Sullivan. Marty talked to Benji about a book he was reading, about a group of kid spies who were constantly saving the world from scheming corporations and politicians, and Jen smiled at me. This was a great idea, I thought to myself. When we got there, I took Benji off his leash and let him run around for a while and told him to come and find me near the benches when he'd had enough. Jen and Marty and I sat on a blanket, ate some tuna salad sandwiches and some fresh fruit we'd bought from an organic produce stand along the way. Then I kicked a ball around with Marty for a while. He was too small to kick it back properly, but he wasn't too small to intercept it if I kicked it softly enough. When the sun had started to go down, though, Benji still hadn't returned. Usually when we picnicked, he stayed around or came back soon, but this time there was no sign of him for hours.
Where do you think he is? Jen asked.
I don't know. Maybe he found some girl dogs or something. I grinned.
That's not funny. You know, I read that someone's been kidnapping sentient dogs. They've been disappearing from all over. It's terrible.
Don't worry, I said. I'll go find him. He's got to be around somewhere. And with that, I left the two of them sitting on the picnic blanket. I wandered around the park, calling out his name and looking in any place I could think of where he might be. He wasn't by the old bandstand with the faded paint or the new jungle gyms. I couldn't find him anywhere near the mini museum or the tennis courts, and he wasn't out by the viewpoint overlooking Puget Sound. I asked everyone I ran across, and nobody had seen him, though even if they had, would they have noticed him? Finally, on the opposite end of the park from where Jen and Marty were waiting, I followed a trail that ran right between a couple of lazy old pine trees and over a small rise. When I got to the top, I could hear a loud voice, a dog's voice, accompanied by murmurs. I came down the hill, and in the dimming light, I saw a pack of dogs all sitting together in a circle, gathered around a big white husky that seemed to be orating to them. Every once in a while, they responded in unison, with a jolting yelp or bark. It was too dim to see the dogs in the pack clearly, but Benji had to be there somewhere. Ignoring a faint sense that I was trespassing, I moved down the hill. As I got closer, the oration got clearer. And besides, the issue is, humans do not think of us as people. How many of you have ever shit indoors? The dogs muttered among themselves, and then most of them replied, one by one. I have. And what happened? Your master rubbed your nose in it and threw you outside. Do they do that to babies who crap in their diapers? The consensus, quickly reached, was a resounding no. The thing to remember, to understand, is that humans will never, ever see us as we see ourselves. They think they love us, but... The dogs yelped affirmatively in response. Benji? I interrupted. After the howls had died off, and before the husky could continue. I guess I must have been downwind or something, or maybe talking and listening took so much of their brain power that they paid less attention to scent, because they suddenly all turned and looked at me in what felt like surprise. Having all those eyes on me was nerve-wracking. Some dogs bared their teeth, growling softly, and I half expected to become an example in the husky's diatribe, or for him to order them to attack me. But they all just stood there, looking at me angrily, until Benji turned and trotted from the pack of them over toward me. Come on, Benji, I said. Let's go. He said nothing, but followed me quietly, and I only looked over my shoulder once. They didn't follow us, but instead just sat there, silently watching us go. Laws or no laws, I didn't leash him. I didn't even dare try.